question. How should the disciple see the guru? As God or as a human being? Dekho, in principle, the guru and Krishna are one. The disciple should certainly consider the guru to be God himself. If you say, is the guru a human being or God? Then I say, he is whatever you consider him to be. If you consider him to be human, then he is human. If you consider him to be God, then truly he will be God to you. Very nice. Is my guru God or human? Oh, all right. Whatever you want. You want him to be human? Then he'll be human. If you want him to be God, then he will be God to you. It's wonderful. English is very nice. The Bengali must be sweet. Wonderful. And if you say, how is that possible? How that means how he can be God, right? And if you say, how is that possible? Then I say, why not? If the devotion of his devotee, now he's citing an example, if the devotion of God's devotee caused him to appear from a crystal pillar, then why would he not be able to manifest himself in the tangible Godhead, God, as the Guru? In other words, by Prahlad's devotion, and he says in parentheses, by Prahlad Maharaj's devotion, he caused Krishna to manifest from a crystal pillar in the palace of Hiranyakashipu. He didn't have marble pillars, he had crystal with diamonds inside, and those diamonds were so effulgent that they lit up the palace at night instead of having some kind of funky tube light with poisonous gas inside. You break that open, you'd die if you smell the gas. He had diamonds around, rings of diamonds around the crystal pillars, and there was so much absorbed sunlight during the day they would give off the light, and they're called Suryakant. Suryakant are jewels that give off light, give off Surya. That's the kind of pillars he had. That's the kind of pillar Lord Nisringa came out of. So he's saying that if the devotion of Prahlad can make God come out of the pillar, then why can't your devotion for Guru make God come out of the Guru? Why can't your devotion for Guru make God come out of the Guru? That's why he's saying he's whatever you want him to be. You want him to be human, he'll be human. But if you want him to be God, then God will come out of him. Very nice. Fantastic. For you, now this means disciple. Because in other words, you have to, when all these pronouns are used, you, he, sometimes I have to adjust, but it's a potential disciple or disciple talking to the guru. So the guru is speaking. So when he says, for you, that means the disciple. So sometimes I'll change it so you understand. For the disciple, Sri Gurudev is the tangible manifestation of God. That is how high your esteem of your guru must be. If you worship your guru in the image of some other sadhu, sannyasi, brahmachari, or mahapurush, then you will be deceived. You should know your guru to be Premananda Maya Nityananda. He is the avadut who is beyond all rules and prohibitions. He means the guru. You cannot worship guru in the image of some other sadhu, sannyasi, or mahapurush. In other words, the idea is you can't worship your guru and think, well, why, my guru, why isn't he like those other sannyasis? Or why isn't he like that? I mean, your worship is, in other words, you're worshiping him and thinking, well, he's not like those other sannyasis, or he's not like that other guru, or he does like that, or this Maharaj does like that, or, you know, the Gaudiya Mata Maharaj does this or that. And try to, in other words, it is certainly very important to consider Sri Gurudev to be God himself. How many ordinary disciples are able to see Sri Guru exactly as God, apart from some highly qualified disciples? Look, Dekho, if you are not able to see Sri Gurudev completely as God, then consider him to be the most trusted relative of God. From this esteem of the most trusted relative, the awareness of him as God will gradually develop. So nice, very nice. All right, wait a minute. I mean, I really can't see this sannyasi as God. Anyway, he's a close relative of God. If you have that feeling, then gradually, and it's a genuine feeling, and then you have all full surrender and full faith in him, and you're serving him, then gradually you'll come to the point to see him as actually as the manifestation, the tangible manifestation of God. Acharya mam vijaniyam. Krishna tells Uddhava in Gita, the Acharya is me, Acharya mam vijaniyam. Vijani. Vijani means gyan. Vijani means you should realize, you should understand, the Acharya is me, I am, there's no difference. But realization also takes time. Then he said, your guru is Premananda Nityananda. Who is Nityananda? He's the Avadhut, right? Nityananda is beyond all the rules and regulations, takes all his clothes off in Srivas Thakur's house, he drinks some milk from the breast of Malini. It's pretty wild. So, Gurudev, he is also Avadhut. He's beyond all rules and regulations. You cannot worship him in the image of some other sadhu. I think I made the point clear. You can't say, he's my Gurudev, you know, he takes mridanga and he puts it on his head and he spins around and maybe I can't digest that. Why does he do that? Other sannyasis don't do that. You know, this is something what he's saying. Don't try to compare your guru to some other guru. Your guru is everything. Your guru is God and he's manifesting in his own way. It's like we may do some things that no other sannyasi will ever do or something. So someone will say, oh, what is this Maharaj? Or someone will tell you, oh, this is that. So, you know, I don't want to hear it. All this blessing. My guru is God and he's Avadhut and like that. Is that, everyone had, anyone else has confusion about that? Mm-hmm. You got the point about seeing him as a relative and then gradually... Mm-hmm. Awareness of him as God will gradually develop. It's very sweet. What is the relationship between guru and disciple like? This is wonderful, isn't it? I mean, we live, this is our life. This is guru tattva. This is one of the tattvas that we should know. So, it was so close, so sweet, and so full of responsibility. Incredible. It's not like, oh yeah, my guru is great, he just tells me all stories all the time, all pastimes, really great. I don't do a damn thing. I don't do any service. I just kick back and eat Mahaprasadam that day, and he asks me to do something, I don't do anything. It's an interesting combination. It's so close, it's so sweet, and it's so full of responsibility. Like he gives me so much things to do, I have to do this at 8 o'clock and that at 9 o'clock. I'm working my tail off. You know, responsibility means service. But Krishna has his ways, or guru has his ways. The relationship between guru and disciple is so close, so sweet, and so full of responsibility that no one but a greatly surrendered disciple can easily understand it. In other words, only the disciple can understand it. No one outside can. And only someone who's very greatly surrendered can understand this relationship. If the disciple suddenly remembers Sri Gurudev or his teachings while being engaged in material duties or in discussing something, he will immediately lower his head with the purpose of bowing it down to his feet. In other words, the Goswami may be speaking to a Grihastha at this time. The Gurudev may be speaking to a Grihastha disciple. So the Grihastha, he's working. It's not that everybody's in the temple doing, you know, making garlands, right? In Bengal, there's thousands of devotees that have gurus and they live in Calcutta. So this seems to me what's being said there. If the disciple is engaged in material duties, family duties, that's a material duty, going to the job, working, like that. He's a devotee and he chants his rounds and he worships his deities, but he goes to work and provides for his family. But during the time while he's at work, he thinks, oh my Gurudev, my Sri Gurudev, I'm so fortunate. Jai Gurudev. Then he goes on. He just thinks. So he's saying what he'll do, what that devotee will do when he remembers his Gurudev. He'll bow his head. And even if you're in the temple and you think of your Gurudev, or of course it's also told when we meet someone, this is told in Hari Bhakti Vilas in the section on achar, proper behavior. Of course we speak so flippantly. We just speak this way, that way. Oh, who's your guru Dave? Oh, my guru Dave, Joe. Who's yours? Bill and Tom, Dick and Harry, you know. Oh, well, how's Tom? How's Dick and Harry, you know? But generally, in the proper sangha, someone say, oh, excuse me, who is your guru Dave? And you'll say, and you'll bow your head, and you'll actually go this, and at least you'll fold your hands. It may seem, from our upbringing, it seems, quote, corny or wacky or weird or strange or artificial. But if you actually have guru bhakti, you don't care what the world thinks. You don't care what your sister thinks or your brother thinks or your mother thinks or anybody thinks. You care what Krishna thinks and what guru thinks. And Krishna's sitting there watching. Oh, now there's no one around. There's just you and your grandmother. And now she's asking who your guru Dave is. I'm watching it. I'm noting it. Now how are you going to act now? How are you going to act now? Because no one's watching you. Because when someone's watching you, like when the teacher's in the room, everybody's like, and her grandmother says, well, who's that? Who's that? What's that? What's that picture? What's that on your bead bag? Or well, I don't know what she won't say that, but she, what's that button on your bead bag? Or what's that? What's that? I came in your room. You have this little picture on your wall with blue tack by your bed. What's that? Who's that guy? Oh, grandma. You fold your hands. This is my beloved Gurudev. This is Divine Grace or His Holiness or whatever you say. You usually, you'd say Sanskrit. You'd say, but she was like, what's that? And you'd say, Sri Srimad. You say, Om Vishnupad, Sri Srimad, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj, Sri Gautama. You would actually bow down like that. And what would happen if you did that? But she will see for the first time in her life, she will see for the first time in many lifetimes, bhakti. She will actually see bhakti. And if someone just sees bhakti for 1 second, it can change the whole course of their material life. They can actually turn from darkness to light just by seeing an example of real bhakti. Because guru bhakti means Krishna bhakti. Love for guru means love for Krishna. And people never see this in the material world. Your grandmother's never seen it. And she sees her little granddaughter. Now, she may say all kinds of things and think, oh, but she will see actual bhakti. And that will impress the heart. Her mind may be going crazy and say things. The mind is temporary. The heart is eternal. The mind is temporary, and this material mind. But that will make an impression, because she's never in her life, never in thousands of lives, seen such a thing. Someone bend down their head, and if that person really has guru bhakti, when they remember their guru, they're some tear will come, and that's something special. And they'll say, oh, okay. And if they're a little bit of a serious person, they'll say, oh, that's nice. You know, they'll be speechless, practically speaking. If they're civilized people, they're just animals, they'll say some crazy thing. But I've had the experience myself. Some people are animals, and they respond accordingly. And some people are civilized human beings, and they respond accordingly. If he suddenly remembers Sri Gurudev, he will immediately lower his head with the purpose of bowing his head down to the feet of his Gurudev. And similarly, as soon as Mangala Arti means auspicious, and Ankshi means, says here, this is Sri Gurudev who desires the disciple's welfare. As soon as the Mangala Akshi Sri Gurudev remembers his disciple, he will at once raise his hand to bless him. So if you're sitting there, Guru's sitting there, and the disciple's not there, and he's thinking of his guru, of his disciple, then he'll say, please bless your disciple, Krishna. Please bless your devotee. The relationship between guru and disciple is not a child's game. A relationship so sweet, yet on the other hand, so filled with responsibility, it cannot be found anywhere. Can it? I don't think so. At least we've had relationships as children, parental relationships with our parents, and we had relationships with our friends in Sakya Bhav, and we had relationships in conjugal with wife. But sweetness, the intimacy, the closeness, responsibility, can't compare. Question. After following the Guru for some time and becoming intimate with him, some disciples develop a feeling that the Guru is something like their kinsman. Is that good? You know the word kinsman? It means family member. Right? Kith and kin means family member. Answer. If the awareness that the Guru is God remains unharmed, then it can be favorable for devotion if one considers the Guru to be like a relative. Now, relative means family member. And such a conception is praiseworthy. So in other words, if you don't lose the awareness, if you just start to think, well, my Guru is like he's my father. He's just my father. Or he's my friend. He's my brother. And then you forget, and he's not really God. He's like my father. He says, that's not good. But if one considers the Guru, if the disciple considers the Guru like an ordinary relative, instead of considering him identical with God, then this becomes the root cause of all mischief. It's wrongdoing or bad activities or bad life. There can be no greater cause for the sadhaka to fall from the path of sadhana than this. It's called minimizing the Guru. All the elevated loving ecstasies from the kingdom of sadhana perish through this. However elevated the sadhaka becomes, the Guru still remains Guru, superior, and a disciple remains Lagu. Like we have a word, Lagu Bhagavatamrita, Brihad Bhagavatamrita. So Lagu means light. Here it says inferior, it means smaller. Guru means heavy or superior. Guru is always Guru. When the Guru is not considered identical with God, the genuinely perfect sweetness of the equality in the Guru-disciple relationship is lost. Deko. As long as the disciple has a firm and unbreakable awareness that the Guru is equal to God, the disciple may serve a cup of milk to the Guru, anxiously holding the cup, kneeling down with tear-filled eyes, sitting at the Guru's feet and staring at him. When Gurudev accepts the milk, then the disciple feels his delivery of the milk has been a success, and he considers himself blessed and fulfilled. But if the disciple is so unfortunate to give up this guru awareness due to living together with the guru for too long and thus developing the wrong vision, he will start considering the guru to be just an ordinary relative and think, why is he getting a cup of milk? Why is he getting a cup of milk and we're not? It seems that we don't mean anything here. In other words, the disciple is thinking, just Prabhupada's exactly point. When Prabhupada was in Mayapur, now they just started the Mayapur project. And Prabhupada is an old man at that time, of course. He's about 80, 79 or 80, whatever. And they got one cow, now the big goshala. And they only were getting enough milk for some deity's sweets and for Prabhupada, for half a liter a day for Prabhupada's milk, because he was taking medicine. So Prabhupada, he said to the devotees, there were a few devotees there, he said, I'm very sorry. There's only enough milk for me. Please forgive me that you're not able to get milk. So, yeah, and Prabhupada was so humble and so loving and caring for his disciples. He said, please forgive me, there's only enough milk for Radha Madhava and myself. So he's saying here that if we consider wrongly that our Gurudev is just a member of our family, this whole conception is all being continued here, that Guru is a relative, right? He's a member of the family. He's my relative. So in the family, what will you think? That's why he's giving this analogy. If you're sitting at the table and your little brother gets a bowl of ice cream. Hey, where's my ice cream? Why is he getting it and not me? You see? Why he's telling this analogy. But when you're seeing your guru, he's your relative. Just like a very humble son, if he was going to serve his father, he would come in with a cup of milk and say, "Father, here's your milk." You know, so he's describing how he said, "Look, as long as so now he's saying the correct mentality. So you're seeing your guru as your relative. He's like your father, but the one who sees guru as relative or father or friend or whatever, but at the same time maintains that my guru is God. He will act like this," and then he explains. As long as the disciple has a firm and unbreakable awareness that the guru is equal to God, when he serves a cup of milk to his guru, this is how he will do it. So he describes. He will go to the guru anxiously holding the cup, and he will kneel down before his Gurudev with tear-filled eyes. Because he's coming before God. It's not, "Hey, Gurudev, hey, Dad, how's it going?" You know, if it's your relative, just your friend, no God conception, you'll just slap your guru on the back, "Hey, Dad, how's it going?" And you'll slap, "Hey, it's good to see you." Right? Father and son. So when you come before Gurudev, there's close, there's friendship, there's response, but there's some reverences there also. "No, hey, how's it going?" Now, when he said, this problem comes from living too long with a guru. Become familiar. We read that, you heard it, we already read it. So he says that familiarity breeds contentment. So he'll be kneeling down with tear-filled eyes, sitting at the guru's feet and staring at him. When Gurudev accepts the milk, the disciple will feel that his delivery of the milk has been a success, and then he will consider that his life is blessed and fulfilled. But if the disciple is so unfortunate to give up this guru awareness that my guru is actually God, and how does he do this? By living together, or living with, he says, living together with a guru for too long, and thus he develops the wrong vision. He will start considering his guru to be just an ordinary relative of the family. And he will think, "Why is he getting a cup of milk and not us? Don't we count around here? Why is he getting the carrot juice and not us?" In an unripe stage of knowledge, and due to too much intimacy, see, two points are made here. An unripe stage of knowledge. In other words, you don't know much. You haven't read many books. You haven't heard much. In an unripe stage of knowledge, and due to too much intimacy, an ungrateful, a lot of words here, and they're all important. You can follow. You follow everything? An ungrateful disciple may start considering Sri Guru to be an ordinary relative. When the disciple has developed such a conception of the guru as an ordinary relative, then all the sadhana bhajan that he has gotten from the guru is unknowingly vanquished. Exclusive allegiance and gratitude to Sri Guru is the foundation of religion. All the possible anarthas are caused by acting independently from the guru. Which means, I guess, that you make offenses and be envious or whatever you said. Considering the guru to be an ordinary relative and being ungrateful towards the guru. There's three causes of the anarthas of the sadhaka. One is acting independently from the guru, minimizing the guru, relativizing, considering him an ordinary relative, family member. And the third one, ungrateful. Not being grateful. "Oh my Gurudev, you saved me. I could never, I'm so, gratitude, so grateful. You've given me so much." The prostitute Chintamani showed Bilva Mangala the path. Somagiri gave him initiation. Still, you can see that Bilva Mangala first praises Chintamani before composing Karnamrita. This is what the conception of guru should be like. So, long story, Govamangala Thakur, but he wrote a wonderful book called Krishna Karnamrita. And when he, in the opening mangala, in the invocation, he says, he says, my original guru was Chintamani, who told him that if you had, she's a prostitute, and he was a fallen brahmana going to see her all the time. She said, if you had just an ounce of the attachment you have for my body, if you had an ounce of the greed that you have to enjoy my body to try to, for Krishna and for serving Krishna, you would attain all perfection in life. You would attain all happiness of life. You should go to Vrindavan and run after Krishna and try to find Krishna. So he took that instruction to heart, and then he came to Vrindavan and stayed 700 years here doing bhajan and moving here and there. So he was indebted to her. He was, in other words, you understand why it's being mentioned? This, he was grateful. Govamangala Thakur, he was grateful to the prostitute Chintamani, because he mentioned 3 points that cause anarthas: being ungrateful to Guru, and to acting independently, and to consider him an ordinary relative. So then he cites an example of someone who was grateful even to a prostitute.